It's time for the Financial Cafe, airing every Saturday morning at 9 a.m. on 88.7 WSIE The Sound. Today's show is underwritten by The Chef Shop, your hometown kitchen accessory store, where a good cup of coffee starts every day right. The views expressed to the Financial Cafe are those of the hosts and do not represent the views of Southern Illinois University Edwardsville, the SIU Board of Trustees, or WSIE Radio. Securities offered through Nickel Investors Corporation at No. 1 Executive Park, Granite City, Illinois, member FINRA and SIPC.
If I had a million dollars.
If I had a million dollars.
If I had a million dollars.
I'd be rich.
And now, welcome to the Financial Cafe and our hosts, Larry Lexo and John Graney.
Good morning, John.
Good morning, Larry. How are you today?
I'm doing wonderful. And again, we're back.
We're back. They still haven't got rid of us, folks. Living the dream, as they say. And we are still, week three, worked up on this topic of state-run retirement plans.
Government does such a good job of everything they touch.
They provide so much material for us to rip on. They really do. We can make a career out of this. I think some already have.
I think we are. I think we're approaching that. In fact, you know, as we were talking before the show, that it's kind of funny. You got to be careful what you ask for, because it was just a short 7 or 8 years ago that John and I met for the first time, and we're sitting in a Starbucks.
Coffee shop.
And having a discussion about the future of the retirement industry. And I have to say, if unfortunately, we were right, because what's happened is pretty much what we had feared was coming down the road. And here we are again, looking at state-run retirement plans, which was, again, something we had feared was coming down the road. And so we've been talking about it the last 2 weeks, and now we're into week three.
So in the earlier shows, and we're not going to do a whole recap, but we talked about the reasons why Larry and John are against it. We provide the information from various organizations why this is a bad idea. We discussed how these plans are going to work. We will have a website up with podcasts, so you will be able to go back here shortly and listen to the previous episodes if you're just catching us now and you feel a little bit out of place, out of sorts, because you missed the first two parts.
Really, John? You mean I'm going to be able to go back and listen to myself?
You can do that if you want. But these in the, you know.
Well, it's kind of like, you know, reading the bill after it's passed so we can see what's in it.
Yes, yes. Yeah. We did use that joke several times already.
Yeah. Yeah, but it works every time.
It does. That's a classic. But what we have left right now is the fee side of this. We talked about the investments last week and how being invested in treasuries probably isn't a good thing. the California plan requires the first 3 years that they will be invested in treasuries. At least that's what they're discussing, and that's how they're considering doing it. Illinois, no more than 50% in equity. So if you're someone who is in their 20s, who has 40 years before you're going to touch this money, having it in something that's earning below inflation, paltry, less than 2%, no one in their right mind. The prudent investment rule kicks in. There's so many things that come into my mind that say no one in their right mind would do this.
Well,
but our government will.
Seems to me the government, does do that. And it just violates every premise we have in modern portfolio theory. You know, a proper diversification allocation for an individual based on their timeline, their risk tolerance, their needs down the road, and it just flies in the face of it all.
I hate when the facts ruin a good narrative. We've mentioned that many times. But Larry, why don't you go through the fees, and we're going to use the California plan. And folks, the reason why we use the California plan is it was really the first one to come up with this crazy idea. And it will kind of be the model going forward for a lot of states. The name Secure Choice has already been adopted by Illinois as well. So why don't you go through that? We also recently proposed on a new piece of business for Larry and I, which is that plan would fit the model for a state retirement plan. So I wanted to provide a detail, because one of the ways that they're spinning this is that the fees will be lower, and not only that, but it's going to help drive the fees down in the private marketplace, which is better for everyone. I mean, they are just pulling all the stops out for this.
That's what they say. Of course, you know, there was a lot of things said before the Affordable Care Act was passed, and you know, and then they found out after they passed it and read it what it actually said. I'm sorry, I went there again. But with
you can keep your doctor. That's another good one.
You
got to pass it before you know what's in it.
Keep your doctor. No changes. Well, yeah, so much for that.
All right, bring it back.
We're back. Administration fees. There are fees, people. If anyone tells you otherwise, they are pulling your leg. They're a magician, or they just don't know what they're talking about, because everything we do in investments has fees. There are different types of fees, but we're going to stay with the state-run plan for a moment. The administration on the plan in California is, let's peg it, about 1%. So right off the bat, 1% of whatever money goes into that plan is going to administration. And I think John and I both tend to agree that they say it's going to be 1%, but when you really get into it, I don't know how many times the government has actually done what they said.
Well, and we talked about that last week, that a government statistic, never believe it, because if it's a forecast, they're always going to be using the absolute best case scenario, i.e. the Affordable Care Act, as far as that the young people will be signing up for this and help defer the or spread the cost out for the older and sick people in the plan. The younger people didn't buy that and they didn't sign up for it, and now the whole thing is folding in on itself.
Don't get me started, John.
Okay.
So let's assume for a moment we know what that means, but I won't talk
about
that.
We'll be nice. Again, we'll go with the government. Best case, the fee is 1%.
Assume administration fee is 1%. The average fund fee is 1%. And 1 and 1 is?
3. No, 2. And the average fund fee is a Morningstar statistic. It's you know, it's been coming down. It was about 1.25 the last time I looked. But, you know, to keep math simple, since Larry's doing this section here, we'll keep it at 1%. So the total fee is 2.
Yeah, I didn't have to get my calculator out to add that up, John.
I thought you had your phone. That's what you were doing.
No phones allowed. So we're 2% total fee. Well, I guess that's better than the 20% fee that California paid to a fund manager. But, really, the competitive is it competitive with the private sector? We don't think so. We do this.
We have
many, many, many plans under administration and under advisement.
I don't even come close to 2%.
An investment fee. I wish we did, then we could have a lot fewer plans.
Well, if we got paid 20%, I'd be retired by now.
Yeah, well, you and I both.
Or in jail.
I'll come visit you. But we just did propose on a plan, has about 26 employees and about $1.25 million in plan assets. And on that plan, the administration cost is 0.12. That's what we fondly in the industry call 12 basis points, or 12 of 100, you know, 1/100ths of a dollar, I guess.
What Larry's struggling to say here, folks, is a basis point is 1/100th of a percent.
That's what I said.
Exactly.
Average fund fee is about 0.21. Advisor fee, 0.45 on that size plan, and a record-keeping fee about 0.26. Now, if you add that all up, put the calculator away, John, it's 1.04%. That is government math for you, you know. The private sector plan will cost you basically half of what the Insecure Choice program will cost. I hate it when the facts ruin a good narrative.
I know. And folks, when we talk about the average fund fee in the California plan, we're assuming that they're going to be using a mutual fund. For the majority of our retirement plans, we use what are called ETF or exchange-traded funds. We still do have some plans that are in mutual funds. And when it comes time to do that plan benchmark analysis, we'll run it against an ETF type of platform. And if it warrants enough savings, you know, that company may switch over, but that is the direction that the industry is going. So the average fund fee in an ETF platform is about 0.21% versus the 1% for a mutual fund.
Yeah, it defies logic, John. In California, if you're participating in a state-run plan and the fees are 2% and inflation is, pick a number, another 2.5%. So I'm at 4.5%. So unless my investment returns more than 4.5%, I'm losing money.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the way it stacks up.
And that's a big hurdle.
In a private plan where we're doing the administration providing ETF investments and we're at about 1%, then if inflation's at 2.5, you only need to be at 3.5 to make money. So it's there's less cost. The company can provide match to help the employees, and the advisor can provide services to help the employees properly prepare for retirement. The retirement readiness that we've talked about on many other shows, being able to sit down one-on-one as fiduciary advisors, as investment advisor representatives, and to actually give investment advice, not just suggestions, but investment advice based on the years of training and experience that, that we've both had.
So what am I getting for that 2% fee in California?
A raw deal.
You're not getting an advisor. The employer really has to be hands-off in order for this to work, based by the rules and so forth. The employer cannot essentially have anything to do other than to take the money out of your paycheck and put it into that program. So no match, no advisor, nothing.
And the good news for those in Illinois, those businesses, again, not to repeat, but I will, 25 employees, been in business at least 2 years. They have until June of 2017 to implement this program to allow their employees to invest 3% of their salary into investments that have not yet been chosen. I love that, John. It's just so nice. And guess what, Mr. and Mrs. Employer, kind of like the business replacement tax in Illinois, don't get me started. You know, you pay tax, and then, oh, by the way,
your taxes.
You made another dollar or two, so we're just going to, you know, throw another $400 or $500 in tax on top of everything else because, and the name, business replacement tax. I'm not replacing my business. I guess they're just replacing their tax. But anyway, don't get me started. So on these plans in terms of investing, the state-run program is just not a viable solution for many employers. And where I was going with that, which I lost momentarily, I don't know how that happens, was if the employer doesn't implement the plan.
He's old, folks.
Then guess what? You get to pay a $250 penalty per employee. So now we're at $7,500 penalty to the employer because he didn't implement the plan to mandatorily force his employees to put 3% of their salary into a plan the state is running in into investments, which we don't know what they are.
He didn't implement the plan because he was of sane mind and understood that it was a bad idea.
Yeah, and the whole way around it, of course, our preference is let's do an actual retirement plan, 401k, you know, SEP, SARSEP, whatever it happens to be. Give us the ability to design a plan that meets your needs to benefit the employees that deserve to be rewarded for doing a good job, to save taxes, because all the money that you put in on a 401k and a pre-tax, not Roth account, but a pre-tax, you save state tax, you save federal tax, and any contribution that the employer puts in to the plan, not only is he saving tax in terms of FICA and on the contribution, but he's saving on workman's comp, he's saving on unemployment insurance, he's saving on many of the other costs that are assigned to compensation to an individual working in a company, do not apply to an employer contribution to a retirement plan.
It just makes sense, and I just scratch my head. I don't understand. Well, I mean, we know why. I mean, to help fund, you know, the investments are going to be in treasuries and so forth. But you know, this is my soapbox. This is Larry's soapbox. This is something that just we just cannot have take over. It's going to be a complete disaster. And I, you know, as Larry mentioned, we were talking about this years ago, and I cannot believe, one, that I'm actually in a radio studio, but cannot believe what the DOL did and where we are now, that this is actually happening.
It's amazing, John. The longer I live, the more amazed I am at what people do and how they go about doing it, and they call it, the normal. If you go to Forbes, you know, everybody, I think most everyone has heard of Forbes, pretty well respected in the industry, and there are a number of Forbes columnists, if you would Google it, that you can pull up, and an article that was put out there recently, in fact, I think just about a week ago, basically says the private retirement system in the U.S. is getting better than ever. About 4 in 5 full-time workers have access to a retirement plan through their employer. Nearly 80% of those with access are participating. and they're more diversified in their investments than ever before, and plan architecture is continuing to get better. But some lawmakers refuse to let the good news shake them from their insistence that more government involvement is needed to boost retirement security. Lawmakers, again, from Connecticut to Washington, are considering letting the state manage the retirement funds of these private sector workers. And, of course, as we've been talking about, given how poorly states like California and Illinois have funded the pensions that they already have for their own employees, one would think that this would be dead on arrival as opposed to progressing forward.
It's scary.
It's government assist in the private sector, and we don't need government intervention. We need to get out of the way, allow us to do our jobs as investment advisors, to counsel the participants, to help them learn what they need to do, not only for retirement. That is a need. That's not a want, folks, anymore. You may want a vacation. You may want a new car. You may want to go out and have fun. But if you don't save for retirement and you don't save enough, that's going to be a big, big issue down the road, because Social Security will be modified. I don't think it's going to go away completely, but it will be modified, and it will no longer be, never was intended to be the primary source of income for an individual, but it will no longer represent maybe even a third of what you're going to need to retire on.
So Larry and I have done the past couple shows, and we talked about why we don't like this. What are some ideas that we have? One, as we mentioned, leave the retirement plan industry alone. In April, the DOL passed the fiduciary rule. They haven't even given it a they haven't even implemented it yet to give it a chance to see how it works. As we mentioned, 80% of companies are offering a private retirement plan for their employees. 80% of those employees are participating. The price, that because of different these different rules that have been enacted, the prices and so forth, the cost of these plans are coming down. Free up, let the advisors actually give advice to the participants. Don't say you can only talk in asset classes, you can only come and do a presentation, and but you can't do anything specific. In every meeting, anytime I've met with a participant, it always comes down to, well, what do I do? Tell me what to do. That's what we are educated in. This is what we do. Let us do our job and help these people prepare and save for retirement. On the government side, let's actually have a budget. Right? You know, something crazy like that. Let's actually have a budget. Let's reduce the taxes. Let the people keep more of what they earn, and then they'll be able to save more for retirement. Bring jobs back. You know, we do have a serious issue with the opportunity to find a job, a good paying job, is getting difficult, is getting very hard. So let's enact different policies at the top level that will bring the jobs back to the United States. And then people can actually save for retirement. We do a okay job of rewarding companies that provide these plans, but let's do more. You know, if a company offers a 401k, let's create some incentives to help do that. If they actually add a profit sharing feature and they make a profit sharing contribution, reward the company for doing that, incentivize the companies to make the private sector stronger than it is today. Even if they don't, the private sector is still going to be stronger and better than this public pension, getting angry again,
plan. Debacle?
Yeah.
We'll use debacle.
MUBAR.
MUBAR, yeah. It's a debacle. Well, interestingly enough, median employer plus employee contribution rates are nearly at 10% of income. I'm back on the Forbes article. So if they're putting away 10, and many of you who have followed the show and listened to it, my goal is to get every participant up to between 12 and 15% of their compensation over their lifetime to accumulate invested into a properly allocated investment portfolio that becomes more conservative as they get towards retirement. That if they are putting in 10% or more, we're on the road. There's a few more things that can be done, but one of the problems with larger government role could bring unwelcome government intrusion into capital markets, where more than $10 trillion of defined contribution assets are invested. It's not hard to stretch to imagine politicians pressuring funds to over or underinvest in particular geographies, industries, or causes. And such large-scale misallocation of investment funds could harm not only the financial market returns to the participants, but the overall economic performance. Today's retirement system is stronger than most distractors care to admit. They just take a look around. Two problems in particular are calling for a solution. I'll agree to that. How to increase coverage and how to provide more opportunities for lifetime income. There are solutions out there, but in both cases, the answer is not more government. The answer is less government, particularly in the form of simpler regulatory framework that reduces employer costs and protects well-meaning employers from excessive concerns about fiduciary risk. Economics could be improved by encouraging small employers to join other groups and maybe multiple employer plans, which is still being talked about at the IRS and Department of Labor level, but the system isn't broken. We need to
talk about that. I forgot about that one. I mean, I forgot about it in this context, but that is an interesting concept, the MEP, if you will. Why don't you talk about that and give the listeners an idea of how that could work, and it makes perfect sense.
Well, there currently, I was reading this morning or yesterday afternoon, there is a resurgence in the Senate right now in a bill that was proposed to allow employers to become part of a multiple employer plan or a multiple employer group. How this would work is, for example, if you're a member of, let's just say, the Chamber of Commerce, you know, good organization, in my opinion, and the Chamber of Commerce wants to set up a multiple employer plan in their community, there would be one plan, one administrator to operate it, and there would be the opportunity for a bunch of different employers to participate in the plan, for their participants to select their own investments, for the employer to make contributions. But it would assist in terms of some of the administrative costs and, again, lowering the overall administrative cost to everyone to participate. We're in favor of those types of situations. Unfortunately, in the past, there have been some multiple employer situations that were taken out of context, and it's become a real issue. But if they can clean up some of the regulations, that opportunity would be out there. And the key is employers should be sponsoring a plan of some type. And there are many choices out there, and many of them are very reasonable and have fees that are definitely in line. Some of the impacts we're seeing, John, I was talking to a wholesaler this morning, in fact, and he indicated one of the good things is the first time in his history he's seen a lot of the major fund company sponsors out there, and everyone here could name, you know, half a dozen or more, that they are actually working together right now to determine what is the best way to provide investments under the new fiduciary rule taking effect April of next year, coming out with a different share class, with a level fee type of investment, coming out with different ways of minimizing the expense and the cost to the employer and the participant. So more to come in that area, but there are things being considered, and fees are a big part of it, and fees are a big part of the new fiduciary rule. And that's what John and I spent a lot of our time doing, is analyzing fees on plans to determine that they are the most effective. We are looking at some right now where, you know, the fee structure is the participant is paying. By the time you get done adding in administrative fees, you're adding in fund fees, you're adding in fees that are being paid to the fund company. And they might be up 2-3%, and it's difficult to make your money work for you when you're paying those kind of fees. So the plans that we provide, particularly if they're of a size that we can justify using exchange-traded funds, which are very, very low-cost funds, similar in many ways to mutual funds, yet different. They're passive-type investments by and large, but we can get the total cost of a plan down below 1%. And if you're below 1% all in terms of the investment, in terms of the administration and all other fees, then what an opportunity for someone to build their nest egg over time. You know, if the market's doing 8 or 9% and you're only paying 1%, you got a pretty nice return to work from, you know.
And you're going to get the opportunity to work with an advisor who's experienced in this industry, who can has the software and the tools to help you with those decisions. It's the way the business should be done,
well,
in my humble opinion.
And statistics, and I like your opinion, John.
I appreciate that.
Yeah, trust that. But statistics have borne out time and time and time again that individuals, whether participants or retail investors who work with a qualified financial advisor and take their advice, always, I will repeat again, always do better than people trying to do it on their own. We've seen many times where well-educated individuals, people who have multiple degrees in their particular field of expertise, think they know it all and that they can do a better job. And we have seen time and time again that that's been proven wrong. You know, they may well know what they know in their field, but they are not qualified or capable of working in the investment field and making the decisions, because emotion comes into play. You know, fear and greed are the biggest enemies of getting a proper return on investments. The average investor, and these statistics will be close. I didn't bring that paper with them, but the average investor may have only earned around 3%, you know, over the last 20 years, but the market's average closer to 9 or 10%. And why is that?
Fear. Well, as we talk about, any financial decision based on emotion is almost always going to be wrong.
Always.
If you think about it, you know, if the market's going up, I want to get in. Well, you've probably missed a good chunk of the run-up. Market's going down, I want to get out. Well, now you just bought high and sold low, which is, you know, investing is counterintuitive. And when you work with a professional, they will pull you in off the ledge. You know, they will sit down with the participant in 401k who's nervous because their account went down in value in a given quarter. Relax. You got plenty of time. You know, basically take the emotion out of the decision. We have a plan in place. Let's let the plan work. We'll reevaluate it, you know, on an annual basis. But, you know, we're not going to make wholesale changes. You're not going to get that with a state-run retirement plan. You don't even get to talk to anybody.
Well, that sounds like it makes a lot of sense, John. You get no advice investing in...
You pay more in fees.
You pay more in fees, get no advice investing in investments that we're not really sure what they are yet. And by the way, if the employer doesn't do it, then we're going to make him pay exorbitant fees to who? The government. That's the way it works. I always say, I'll go back to my studies from the 1950s that have shown, you know, there's five steps to success. If you want to have a successful retirement, you have to have a plan. It has to be in writing. Yes, that means written. Doesn't have to be cursive, but it has to be written. It has to have specific time frames, specific objectives. Has to be implemented. I've seen a number of plans when I ask someone, well, have you ever done a plan? Oh, yeah, we did a plan 4 or 5 years ago. Well, how did it go? Oh, it didn't work very well. Well, why not? Well, we never implemented it. And, you know, that's kind of like getting in the car, wanting to go somewhere, not having put gas in it. You know, I just came up with that, John.
That was pretty good.
I thought that was good. Yeah. So no
gas. Coffee's kicking in.
Coffee's kicking in, I guess. So you have to have a plan. You have to be specific time frames, objectives. Has to be in writing. You have to implement it. And the last step, you have to monitor it and make adjustments as you go down the road. I heard you mention something the other day, John, talking to someone that once we finish a financial plan for anyone that we work with, I think the statement you made was that chances are better than not that it's not going to work.
Well, at least the way the output, the likelihood of that output, I wouldn't say it wouldn't work because, yeah. But the likelihood that the output that we're looking at a given moment happening is pretty small. And people look at me and go, well, why would I even do it? Well, because we are going to monitor it and we're going to make the appropriate changes on at least an annual basis. And by doing that, we will make sure that your goals and objectives are met.
So if you have the plan, specific time frames, objectives, you implement and you monitor the plan, you have over 90% chance of success. And I'll take 90% chance of success anytime, John.
I agree. Certainly better than state-run retirement plans. I'm not going to let this go.
I think they've gotten the point. We will, I'm sure, address more shows in this area as more information becomes available. And, of course, the opinions expressed on the show are those of John Graney and Larry Lexo. Please send us your questions, comments, any other information that you would like us to talk about or even topics for the show to Jay Graney, J-G-R-A-N-E-Y, at N-I-C-O-L financial.com or L Lexo, L-E-X-O-W, at N-I-C-O-L financial.com. As we take a last sip today of our Italian roast coffee, John.
I like it. I'm on board.
This is one I knew you would like before we even got it. It's Central and South America coffees that are combined with winey African beans. What's a winey bean, John?
Whatever it is, it's good.
Yeah, it is good. And taken to a dark roast level, creating a smooth, toasty blend.
I didn't get to participate last week with the hazelnut. I just had to exempt myself from that one.
Yeah, yeah.
So I'm glad to pick this one up, and I will be getting some more of this with the great people over at the Chef Shop.
Go visit both Scott and Nancy at the Chef Shop, 2320 Troy Road, Edwardsville, Illinois, 62025. Phone number 618-659-9840. I'll do that again. 618-659-9840. Tell Scott and Nancy you heard us on the show, and pretty soon there's going to be an extra surprise for you waiting over there.
We will be providing them with some giveaway items. You say you heard us on the show, and they will provide you with what we give them to give to you.
Can I participate, John?
No.
Oh, sorry.
We don't have any employees, but... related with the Financial Cafe are not eligible to participate, whatever disclosure we can come up with for that.
If we had other employees, they'd be exempt or something. I don't know. Financial Cafe, folks, we're glad you're listening. Hope you're enjoying it and getting some good information. As you've probably figured out, state-run retirement plans are not our favorite, but private retirement plans that we can be involved with and help employers and participants to succeed with are definitely in our wheelhouse. So I guess that's all for today, John.
We're wrapping things up. Folks, have a great weekend.
Have a great week. We'll be back again next week, hopefully, as long as WSIE keeps bringing us back.
Keep opening the door. We'll be here.
We will. Thanks you much. Have a great weekend.
You've been listening to the Financial Cafe, airing every Saturday at 9 a.m. on 88.7 WSIE The Sound. Today's show is underwritten by The Chef Shop in Edwardsville, your hometown kitchen accessory store, where a good cup of coffee starts every day right. Listeners are invited to send your questions regarding retirement, investments, or any other financial topic that may pique your interest. Send the questions to John at jgraney@nickelfinancial.com or to Larry at lexo@nickelfinancial.com. John and Larry will discuss those questions each week during their Q&A session. If you prefer, they will respond to you in private. Thanks for listening to the Financial Cafe on 88.7 WSIE The Sound.